Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. Titanic Tuesday is off and running at a rollicking pace, a jaunty gallop, if you will. It's about 2 minutes past the hour. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the madcap, merry, rollicking, zany multimedia real-time extravaganza that is the horn chat room between the hours of 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Monday through Friday. You know, the hours when the program is live. If you pick yourself out a screen name and a password and hop in, you will be met by Don from Central PA, Hoghead, Jugapunch, VT Blom, and many others as they wander in over the course of the evening, all moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has apparently chosen not to fold space today, because it's been kind of rainy and whatnot there in Northern California. Okay, not rainy so much as deluge. Okay, yeah. So, it's Titanic Tuesday on the horn. That is the day that we set aside for taking note of examples of Titanic intellect in the right wing. You know, among the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, deathers, birchers, booger eaters, trumpansies, Republicans, libertarians, you know, them, those people. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is a listener-supported broadcast effort, and I can happily thank our subscribers for taking down our $190 backlog so that from last night where we, you know, kind of laid an egg thanks to the three people who did jump in. Thank you very, very kindly. But anyway, we've only got $260, you know, the regular $200 and then $60 from last night to make up. So thank you. Thank you to our subscribers. If you'd like to become a subscriber yourself and help make things easier, and take us one more step toward that eventual Beulah land of having 400 $10 a month subscribers, well, just go to headonradionetwork.com, click on Contribute, and click that little box that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation. Put whatever amount in there you want. Oh, Mr. Soros, you could put in $10,000, okay? Thank you, George. So many other people listen, but I guess George doesn't. He's a busy man. But at any rate, put in whatever amount you want, and you will be part of the sustenance that helps out ever so much when a given broadcast fails to generate sufficient funding to keep up with our, you know, goals. Right? Let's see. I did the high. I'm Bob Kincaid. So, barring that, if you don't want to be a subscriber, that's cool, too. Anything helps. $5, $10, whatever. Mr. Soros! No, never mind. But we try to raise $200 every evening. This evening is $260. That means one at $260, two at $130, four at $65, eight at $32.50, 16 at 16 and a quarter. I'm thinking that might be a little sketchy. But anyway, we know how it goes with me and ciphering. But it, or, you know, one at 10 at 26, 26 at 10. Whatever it takes to get us there and keep us on track so that this little effort at independent broadcasting can continue into its next year, because it's been around for a while, and it's all because of you. And because of you, you support the ability of folks who can't support the program to continue to be able to listen anyway, because we don't sell anything here. Nothing is for sale. Nothing. This is not a profit-seeking enterprise. This is just an attempt to keep a conversation going that, well, you seem to think is badly needed and much appreciated, much valued. And thanks for all the kind emails I get over the course of, and have gotten over the course of the years. Thank you very much indeed. So just run on over to headonradionetwork.com and click on contribute and help out as you can, especially if you haven't in a while. Because it really, really does matter, and it makes it available for people who can't. And on top of it all, make sure that that this program is about content. You know, we had a little conversation last night. I was talking with Scott, and he said, you know, I said the real content of Rush Limbaugh is the advertising, and then the shrieking is the filler. Well, this is all content. No ads for Buy Gold Now or Bose Wave radios or General Steel buildings or Lumber Liquidators floors, or any of that other foolishness. Just pure content. And it is your contributions that make that possible, plain and simple. It is Titanic Tuesday, and yes, that's an appellation that goes back, not Appalachian, Appalachian, A-P-P-E-L-L-A-T-I-O-N. Are there two P's? Maybe not. It ain't a spelling bee. But it goes back several years to a time when our buddy Jim was listening to right-wing radio in Beckley, America's fifth smallest radio market, and heard the morning monotone take a call from someone asking him, "Why do you reckon it is that there's seashells in the rocks in West Virginia, Steve? We ain't nowheres near the ocean." To which the morning monotone replied, causing several cars to, the drivers to fall asleep, and never mind. "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." The Titanic plates. Yeah, I know. I know. Still no word. No word whatsoever on the movement of the Titanic microplane grader. Nope. Big table there on the Titanic. So that's what we celebrate here. Right-wing attempts at intellect. And understand, the key word is, in fact, attempt. No, I'm sorry, Larry. We also do not offer here the Bob Kincaid male vitality pill. No. Just enter the code word Bob in the box when you order it. No, sorry. Don't think that's going to be happening anytime soon. So, where to begin? It looks like it was not a fun day for Mitch McConnell, Chinless Mitch, the Turtle Man, in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. He went down to talk to the Chamber of Commerce there. Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. No, I don't think that's in my family's old stomping grounds. Lawrence County, Kentucky, is where my German ancestors wound up settling. Old Johann Baders, Johann Jörg Baders. He would later, or his family, a couple of generations later, would change it to Borders so as not to sound quite so German. No, I don't think Lawrenceburg is in Lawrence County. But Mitch McConnell was. Oh, yes, he was. And 1,000 protesters showed up. And somebody put up a hasty sign, only confirmed RSVPs are allowed at this event. No signs of any type or size. No video or recording except by credentialed media. No yelling or abusive language will be tolerated. And, of course, abusive language is anything that Mitch McConnell doesn't approve of. This, of course, being, or you know, his right-wing, repig-licking, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical handlers. This sort of dovetails with last night's conversation about the meaning of the First Amendment. And in regard to that conversation last night, I would simply say this. There seemed to be a consensus that we can't do anything about hate speech in the United States because First Amendment. I still say that's not necessarily so. And I would point out that many countries in the world manage to maintain a rule about common decency in speech and conduct, and yet they are not suffering under the lash of tyranny and suppressed speech. They're just decent. You know, the most polite people on earth are, I think we have consensus on this here, Canadians. And they got a hate speech law, and the Swedes have a hate speech law, and the Germans have a hate speech law, and it doesn't seem to make them any less free. Why, I'll bet they, each of those three nations I cited, I'll bet they've got several choices in breakfast food in their local grocer's aisle. Yeah? I mean, I'll bet the Swedes aren't just sitting there numbly grinding their muesli. I'll bet they've got some super sugar frosted sugar bombs. Sure. I'll bet they've even got a free press. Uh-huh. But what they don't have is the infliction upon their body politic of the likes of Milo Yiannopoulos, who, incidentally, resigned as an editor at Breitbart today, swearing that he would land on his feet and found his own hate-filled news site or get another gig somewhere else. Well, good luck to you. You know, my personal hope is that you don't. But that's just me. And see, I can say that without being hateful. So I guess we'll just kind of toddle along with our expansive understanding of the First Amendment, just like we toddle along with our expansive understanding of the Second Amendment, and, you know, a few people getting beat up or killed or shot or murdered, or a couple of churches getting burnt down or having swastikas and hate speech sprayed over them, or you know, having a historic Jewish cemetery have 100 headstones turned over in it. I guess that's just the price we pay, right? Because freedom. But anyway, over 1,000 people showed up to tell chinless Mitch McConnell where to go and how to get there and when to get off. One woman was recorded asking a question of him. You know, she was recorded by that credentialed, approved media. Let's see how that went. Maybe. You know, or not. All right. More than one way to skin a McConnell. And we'll do it the other way. Because I don't just want to read the contents of her words. She was brave enough to stand up and do this. She damn sure deserves to be heard, and to the extent that I can help amplify her voice, I want to. Let's try this again.
The last I heard, these coal jobs are not coming back, and now these people don't have the insurance they need because they're poor. And they work those coal mines, and they're sick. The veterans are sick. The veterans are broken down. They're not getting what they need. If you can answer any of that, I'll sit down and shut up like Elizabeth Warren.
Ha ha! And he smiled his toothless-looking turtle smile. Uh-huh. I don't think she likes him, but the thing is, she was talking about them coal jobs they promised was coming back. But if she had been paying attention to her senator, she would have heard him a month or more ago say that, no, the coal jobs ain't coming back. We just played you rubes for the schnooks that you are. And in his own smarmy way, McConnell replied, well, I hope you feel better now. And he went on to say that winners make policy and losers go home. So Mitch McConnell freely admits that he does not represent the people who didn't vote for him, which actually is a sort of a departure. It's a departure from at least the previous sham of our political system, whereby, I mean, I can remember as recent as the Reign of Error by Dim Leader, when, well, even if you didn't vote for me, I'm going to be president of all the American people. He tried to kill my daddy. But the lady was not happy, and justifiably so, and every word she said was true. The coal jobs aren't coming back. Part of the reason the coal jobs aren't coming back, in case you were wondering, is because of something that Mitch McConnell did a couple of weeks ago. By the Senate and the House undoing the stream protection rule as promulgated by the Environmental Protection Agency after a rigorous rulemaking process that lasted something on the order of 8 long years, correcting a horrendous injustice perpetrated again by the Bush administration, but begun under the Clinton administration, just got to be factual here, namely the stream buffer zone rule. The stream protection rule was meant to correct that action because the stream buffer zone rule change by the Bush administration allowed coal companies to bury 2,000 miles of streams in Appalachia. Mm-hmm. Well, see, by getting rid of the stream protection rule, McConnell and Rand Paul and Joe Manchin and Shelley Moore Capito and Evan Jenkins and David McKinley and that dude named Mooney, who can't even find Charleston, West Virginia, from up in the Eastern Panhandle because he's a Marylander anyway. Well, they all made sure that there would be less underground coal mining jobs than there were mountaintop removal jobs. And mountaintop removal jobs do not require nearly as many workers as does underground mining. just requires a demolition crew of people driving giant dump trucks around and drilling holes in the earth with a giant drill and packing it full of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil explosives and then setting off the charge and sending a toxic billowing cloud of dust for miles that people can't avoid breathing and can't protect themselves against. And then some more heavy equipment operators to run some D9 Caterpillars around and then put coal in big-ass trucks, and the big-ass trucks take the coal down, and they put them in bigger-ass trucks, and they take them, and they put them in rail cars, and the rail cars go to the sea and put them on boats, and the boats go around the world. Nifty, huh? But in that entire process, it does not require much in the way of labor. And the goal of the coal industry is to get down as close to zero labor as they possibly can get.
Uh-huh.
So, consequently, by destroying the stream buffer zone rule, they made mountaintop removal more attractive than underground mining and therefore less mining jobs. Sounds like there's at least one human being who has figured out that she has been fed a line of errant bullshit. I don't know if the rest of Appalachia will wake up. I somehow suspect that as long as the cable stays on and it delivers Fox News and they've got a preacher in the pulpit hollering about the war on coal, praise Jesus, that they probably will remain sound asleep. Mm-hmm. It is proving to be a tough time for Republicans around the country. Remember Iowa's very own hog castrator Joni Ernst? D-ballin' Joni? She held a town hall for veterans, and apparently at the Maquoketa City Hall, Maquoketa, I will leave it to an Iowegian for proper pronunciation of that word, but anyway, she had a town hall, and she was not, shall we say, warmly welcomed. You did pick that up after a while, didn't you? Your last term. Then some folks wanted to know what her position was on Russia monkeying around in our election process. Now I realize that to a significant but noisy and poorly informed minority of the so-called left, ha! What left? There was no Russian interference because, well, Vladimir Putin's just a snuggly cuddle bear who wouldn't harm a fly or a tiger or sign laws into effect that allow men to beat the shit out of their wives or encourage people to go and stomp the guts out of gay people. No, he's just snuggly wonderful, Pooty Poot is. But still, some folks in Iowa wanted to know, from Joni Hog D-Baller Ernst.
And I also want to thank you for maybe if you talk to the senior senator from our state, you can ask him to start answering his phones. I do appreciate that when I call your office, I think it's Ryan and Ashley, they're all wonderful. They're all very patient with me, and I appreciate that. I want to thank all the veterans here for their service, and I want to direct this at everybody. Perhaps Terry would like to answer one of the people on the panel. But I feel like we all took this oath to defend the nation against all enemies, foreign and domestic, And I wonder if you knew, if you saw that there was overwhelming evidence that a foreign country was meddling in our elections and meddling with our democracy. If you would expect your senator to go to work every day and work vigilantly to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, would she? Yeah. Or madam, how would you feel if it turned out that the president from your party was, you know, a wholly owned subsidiary of Putin Inc.? Well, here's the answer.
Because I have said repeatedly that Russia is not our friend.
Say it louder.
And I just said, I sent President Trump a correspondence this last week, and we told him he needs to stand up against Vladimir Putin.
Can we see that?
Well, I'm sure he'll take that right to heart. Because she sent him a letter telling him to stand up to Vladimir Putin. Now, how would she vote, say, on a resolution calling for an investigation into the Trump administration's ties to Russia? Would she just write another letter instead of voting yay? Would she vote nay and write another letter? Nay! I'm not saying anything by that, but yeah. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Carol Baker. That meeting took place in Maquoketa, Iowa. Thank you. I do appreciate the I appreciate the help, because I was lost. I was completely at sea on that. Maquoketa, Iowa. I will try never ever to forget that. Now, on to, and I alluded to it. Well, let me catch a quick email here. Steve in New York says, under the subject line, winners make policy. I frankly agree with that. Here's the kicker, though. They have to actually make policy. And so far, they really haven't done a lot of that, except for, you know, unless you're, you know, brown or Muslim or something. But still, the policy making, winners make policy. The winners get to make the rules, I guess. Just like the winners get to write the history. But the policy should be made with the good of the American people in mind. And the American people is a group that encompasses more than, in Mitch McConnell's case, just a bunch of goddamned bankrupt coal companies. So we've got that going for us. Hey, thanks very kindly to David in South Carolina for getting us started. $239 to go. $239, thanks to David in South Carolina getting us going. I really do appreciate it, David. Thank you very, very kindly. Hopefully, you'll get some folks standing side by side with you, and we'll knock that down to zero. 239 to go in fundraising for the eat. And David sent a story along, and I'll try to get to that in a minute. But beforehand, you know, and this is sort of, I mean, it's jarring to the brain. Comrade Kumquat canceled a previous trip to the Museum of African American History. And he finally got around to it today. Sleepy Ben Carson found some open time in his schedule. Who are we kidding? He knows nothing about the job he's in. his entire schedule is open time. And a couple of other people of color who were willing to be seen, you know, in the same zip code with a miserable racist like Trump, who has a long and miserable, you know, racist history. Oh, let me just share this before I go on, because this is a trenchant comment. Arnold noting, that's true. The winners do get to make policy. However, Obama didn't get to make any. We had here for 8 years, and how we couldn't spend any money, and he was a socialist, but now we can go full-blown fascism in less than 6 weeks. Arnold says, they can kiss my liberal ass. Well, they can't kiss mine. I think more of my flat, narrow, white rear end than to have it kissed by some goddamn birther, bagger, deather, ninth or tenth or bircher, booger eater, trumpanzee, Republican, libertarian, neo-Nazi, alt-right. Yeah. But your point is very well taken, Arnold. So anyway, the Tangerine Tiberius went to the Museum of African American History today, where he proceeded to brag about himself. At one point, talking about his double-digit wins in some of the states. It was noted on Twitter, one person. Whew! For a second, I thought POTUS would forget to mention his November win when addressing the African American Museum today. And apparently he looked high and low in the crowd, but couldn't find Frederick Douglass anywhere. That was a joke. What's not a joke is that while at the Museum of African American History, he finally noted the disgusting, dangerous, terrifying rash of anti-Semitic events, anti-Semitic acts that have plagued this country since his entry into the White House, you know, because his coalition is made up of a bunch of people who are essentially anti-Semitic, you know, Klansmen, neo-Nazis, skinheads, so-called alt-right white supremacists, those people. What's interesting about it is that he had two chances to, right off the cuff, denounce anti-Semitism at press conferences last week. First, with Bibi Netanyahu in attendance, and then the second day at another press conference. The second one was where he told the Jewish reporter who was wearing the yarmulke and the sacred garments or whatever, he told him to sit down and shut up because he was asking an unfair question. Well, today, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini finally had some scripted words in front of him so that he could say something. Because unless he's talking about himself, unless he's engaging in that self-congratulatory public verbal masturbation for which he is rapidly becoming infamous, he doesn't know anything. He's brutally ignorant. Oh, by the way, yeah, besides Ben Carson, they also scrounged up Ms. Velveeta King, you know, the white sheep of the King family. That probably didn't go, but, well, it was an attempt at humor. She's the one who runs around worried about all the little fetuses. Yeah. So the Clementine Caligula had this to say. Come on. God damn you. Well, I guess we're going to have to, yeah, you're going to have to put up with, hatred and hate-motivated violence of any kind have no place in a country founded on the promise of individual freedom. No, that was Sean Spicer. No. The president's made it abundantly clear that these actions are unacceptable, and these heels are fabulous that I got from Ivanka. No, that old, wait, that's Melissa McCarthy. I get them confused. So it was this morning that he said anti-Semitism is horrible and it's going to stop. And later on, when he was asked if he categorically denounced anti-Semitism, he said to the reporter, who I think was from MSNBC, "Whenever I get a chance to, I do it." Because that's the thing. You know, denouncing anti-Semitism is kind of difficult. I mean, there's only certain times you can do it. It's only when you get the chance. Because, you know, he's president of the United States. It's not like he can say anything to the American people anytime he wants to. He has to get a chance to denounce anti-Semitism. A chance. The problem, though, and this was kind of a failure of reporting or maybe a faltering of courage. I don't know. Who knows how I'd behave in a similar circumstance? But he said, "Whenever I get a chance, I do it." And the reporter didn't say, "Well, no, sir. You had two chances last week at a press conference, and you specifically didn't do it. On two separate occasions, you were asked about the outbreak of anti-Semitism, twice by Jewish reporters, two separate Jewish reporters, and you took a pass, sir." But then the spirochetes would start talking inside his brain, and he'd start yelling, fake news, sit down, unfair question. Asshole. And just to provide a little bit of a follow-up, last night I mentioned, because Andy sent the story along to me, last night I mentioned the desecration of the Jewish cemetery in University City, Missouri, which is a part of St. Louis. I should note that the remains of Holocaust victims are buried there. Yeah, that's what got desecrated. Veterans, Jewish veterans from the Second World War, from Korea, from Vietnam, are buried there. And, you know, some 200 tombstones were desecrated. And it's inescapable that this uptick in anti-Semitism is directly related to the election, sort of election, by the Electoral College of, you know, Trump. And that's all there is to it. Steve Bannon is notorious for his anti-Semitism. Breitbart is notorious for its anti-Semitism. Richard Spencer, remember him? Hail Trump, hail our country. Notorious for anti-Semitism. The Anti-Defamation League, via its CEO and national director, Jonathan Greenblatt, said, "On two separate occasions over 2 days, President Trump refused to say what he is going to do about rising anti-Semitism or to even condemn it. It is honestly mind-boggling why President Trump prefers to shout down a reporter or brush this off as a political distraction. This is not a partisan issue. It is a potentially lethal problem, and it's growing. In light of the bomb scares, online harassment, physical vandalism, death threats, and other hate crimes, there is a simple question at hand that Americans of all faiths deserve an answer to. What is the Trump administration going to do about the recent surge of anti-Semitism? What concrete steps will the White House take to address intolerance? We are going to keep asking this question and urge others in the press and public to do so as well until we get a clear answer from our president. Well, Mr. Greenblatt, I respectfully suggest, sir, that you're going to wait for a long time because they're not going to do a goddamn thing. And by the way, did anybody happen to notice the timing that he only finally said something after his daughter Ivanka tweeted something about it? Oh, what's this? A tweet from Ivanka? What? She's denouncing anti-Semitism? Oh, I better too. I take a lot of my advice from Ivanka. She's very smart. She's very smart. She got very high marks in school. But do something about it? Like what? Like pass a hate speech law? No, that ain't gonna happen. Like punish people for holding anti-Semitic views like civilized countries do? That ain't gonna happen because we've got an expansive view of the First Amendment that says, well, you know, you just got to, you know, if you want to have free speech and if you want people to be able to talk civilly about issues, you just have to put up with the neo-Nazis and the Klansmen and the bigots and the xenophobes and the homophobes. You know, you can't make an omelet unless you break some skulls. I'm sorry, Mr. Greenblatt, nothing is going to happen. I wish something would. But we're not that interested in being a civilized country. Oh, well. In case anybody's wondering, yes, anti-Semitic incidents are through the roof. Over 100 of these bomb threats. Think Progress charting 70 instances of anti-Semitic hatred. And what do you get from the President of the United States? Crickets. Why? Because Steve Bannon and Milo Yiannopoulos themselves said, and I believe them, that more than half of the Republican base is alt-right. That's how you wind up with a Holocaust Remembrance Day proclamation that can't even bring itself to say the word Jews. Donald Trump, if he knows nothing else, Donald Trump knows where his votes came from. And the for-profit media can hand-wring and pearl-clutch till hell won't hold them, but the fact of the matter is he was not elected by economically anxious white people in the Rust Belt. He was elected in large part by Klansmen and neo-Nazis and skinheads and on, and every putrid, pernicious kind of bigot and racist that this country has metastasizing within it. And the ones who aren't that were okay voting alongside those who were. Because they's going to make America great again. Then there's Steve Goldstein. He's the executive director of the Anne Frank Center for Mutual Respect. Of Trump's remarks today, he said, his sudden acknowledgement of anti-Semitism is a Band-Aid on the cancer of anti-Semitism that has infected his own administration. His statement today is a pathetic asterisk of condescension after weeks in which he and his staff have committed grotesque acts and omissions reflecting anti-Semitism, yet day after day have refused to apologize and correct the record. Make no mistake, the anti-Semitism coming out of this administration is the worst we have ever seen from any administration. Any. When President Trump responds to anti-Semitism proactively and in real time and without pleas and pressure, that's when we'll be able to say this president has turned a corner. This, today, is not that moment. Oh, and remember when, and I saw Mr. Goldstein interviewed on MSNBC, or no, CNN earlier today. And I give him credit, because given the opportunity, he said anti-Semitism and hatred against Muslims and racism. So clearly, he knows what the Trump administration is all about. But you do remember a couple of weeks ago when Trump couldn't be bothered to mention or even express condolences when some Muslims were murdered by a Trump fan in Quebec. Remember that? Sure. Guess what else he hasn't mentioned or expressed any sympathy for? This is not to say that the president's only job is as the national expressor of sympathy, but he does set the tone for our national state of mind, because he is in charge, the president constitutionally is in charge of foreign policy. So when a horrible murder like Quebec takes place, it is the president's place to express the condolences of the nation to the bereaved. So he forgot about that, couldn't be bothered, I guess because Ivanka didn't fucking tweet about it. But he forgot something far more dire and far more grave. And again, as the saying goes, attention must be paid. Oh, yes. Last week, in Pakistan, there were 8 separate acts of horror and tragedy. Of those 8 events, 7 were terror attacks. More than 100 people died. Did you know it? Did they cover it over at CNN? MSNBC, CBS, CNN? Fox! Ah! Fox! In Sindh province, in the city of Sewan in Pakistan, terrorists blew up a Sufi shrine. At least 73 people were killed. It was especially bloody, simply and deadly, because it's a place where a lot of worshipers gather every week. And that is just one out of 7. Did you hear Sean Spicer mention it? In his long self-congratulatory verbal masturbation tirade last week, did Donald Trump mention it? The word you're looking for is no. No, he did not. Because, of course, they were the wrong color. Now, he can make up terror attacks in Sweden that leave the Swedes themselves going, huh? What? Huh, Edith? Huh? But does he have time for an outbreak of heartbreak, misery, and death in Pakistan? No. No, why bother? It's like something out of Macbeth. They should have eventually died one way or the other. What's the point? But it sure tells you something, doesn't it? Took him a week to acknowledge a massive wave of anti-Semitic behavior in this country. And he still can't be bothered to mention over 100 people dead in Pakistan. In Karachi, two Sundays back, the media were the target of a bombing, of an attack. One person died. There was a rally in Lahore that killed 13 people and wounded 70 others. There were bombings in Quetta, in Baluchistan province, in the northwestern tribal region of South Waziristan. There were attacks. Five people were killed last Wednesday in Galanai in Momond Agency, targeting the judiciary. A suicide bomber struck a court van in Peshawar. This, of course, is after Trump poured effusive praise last November on Pakistan in a phone call he had with Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, to whom he said, "You have a very good reputation. You're a terrific guy. Your country is amazing with tremendous opportunities. Pakistanis are one of the most intelligent people." Ah, wait. That line, Pakistanis are one of the most intelligent people. I'm not going to take issue with that. But, aha, it's another instance of his reliance on a sort of eugenics, a sort of personal eugenics. He's repeatedly said that he is I'm really smart because I got really smart genes. I've got a smart brain, and because I come from smart people. I know, I can hear you laughing out there. But when you say, oh, the Pakistanis are some of the smartest people, you are also by definition saying that there are people out there who, as a people, are not as smart. One wonders if the people from India are as smart as the people from Pakistan. Because it's a zero-sum game in this kind of fuckwittery. How do people from Pakistan stack up against, say, people from Nigeria or Honduras or South Korea?
Well, I mean, we all know how smart the Koreans are. That's why their children are taking all the white people's places at Harvard and stuff.
Do you see the import of the statement? It's like saying, well, you know, the Jews make the best accountants. Or, of course, black people are faster than white people. And this line of thinking actually is traceable. Faux academics, Charles Murray? The one who said that white people will always be smarter than... Right. And who was it? There was a controversy a year and a half, 2 years ago about the one guy who said that Hispanics will never be as smart as white people, you know, because genetics. Clarity says, Trump's voice disturbs me almost as much as the face of W, the smirking chimp. Does Donald realize his squinting just makes Sun Fu Sun jealous? Well, remember, squinting is a sequela of neurosyphilis. Mm-hmm. Not saying, just saying. So let's take a break. We've got $239 to raise on the evening for this Titanic Tuesday to come even with fundraising. Hopefully that will happen sooner rather than later. We also have the, this being a Tuesday, we have the Green News Report coming up. I always look forward to that from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Lines are open if you want to jump in. And you are... more than welcome to participate. 304-574-8178, 304-663-4676, that spells Horn, 4676. And from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype, Skype to Skype. So it can't get much simpler than that. If you want to participate in the conversation, you are mightily welcome so to do. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
We'll be right back. It's Tuesday, February 21, 2017.
At the end of the day, this is about protecting public health. It's the Environmental Protection Agency.
What to expect for the EPA following the rushed confirmation of EPA enemy Scott Pruitt.
We've learned he was airlifted from the scene just minutes after he caught fire this morning.
Three fossil fuel explosions in 2 weeks. Alaska officials say they can't shut off leaking natural gas pipeline. Plus, the Midwest sets a U.S. wind energy record.
All of that breaking wind news and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The new head of the APA is completely in the tank with the oil and the coal. That's how Republicans work with Donald Trump. While you're watching the clown screw the pony, they're breaking into your car.
Yep, this is your Green News Report.
Just remember that.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, boy, the U.S. Senate was really in a hurry to confirm Scott Pruitt to head the EPA, weren't they?
Yep.
The ayes are 52, the nays are 46. The nomination is confirmed.
And now it's a rough road ahead for the Environmental Protection Agency and the future health and safety of all American citizens now that the U.S. Senate has confirmed Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt to head the Environmental Protection Agency. For the record, Susan Collins of Maine was the sole Republican to vote against Pruitt. Two Democrats voted with the Republicans, Joe Manchin of the coal state of West Virginia and Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota. Both are up for re-election in 2018. Senate Republicans rushed the vote despite a federal judge's ruling the day before for Pruitt's office to release emails he exchanged with oil industry executives while serving as Oklahoma's attorney general, emails that Pruitt had withheld for 2 years.
And if they're anything like the ones we saw before, that he simply copied and pasted from oil executives and sent to the White House, there could be a lot of disturbing stuff in those emails.
But it won't have any effect on his confirmation.
Yes, God forbid we should wait to know who we're actually confirming first.
The Washington Post quotes anonymous administration sources saying that within the next few weeks, President Trump will issue executive orders to roll back President Obama's climate and water rules and lift a moratorium on federal coal leasing. Pruitt said his priority will be to withdraw both Obama's landmark Clean Power Plan that limits carbon emissions from the nation's power plants, and the Waters of the United States rule that would have reduced industrial and farm waste dumping into the nation's drinking water supplies.
So who exactly is the Environmental Protection Agency now protecting?
Good question. Congressional Republicans have pledged to help Trump and Pruitt slash the EPA's budget. In an interview with PBS NewsHour, Jeremy Simons of the Environmental Defense Fund said such draconian cuts could severely damage the EPA's core mission of protecting public health.
I mean, we're talking about gutting core capacities like enforcement, like science, the health studies that need to happen to make sure that pollution is controlled. So we're worried about enforcement, like what he did in Oklahoma. We're worried about interfering with science.
Frankly, the EPA may be a victim of its own success in cleaning up the air and water. Most Americans don't know just how awful pollution was in the United States before the EPA was established by Republican President Richard Nixon in 1970. Rivers were on fire from industrial waste, raw sewage in drinking water supplies, air pollution as bad as Beijing, China's is today. Meanwhile, over just the last 2 weeks, three new major fossil fuel explosions in the United States. In Louisiana, one worker was killed in a natural gas pipeline explosion on February 9th that also injured two other workers. It took nearly 5 days to extinguish that fire, with no cause yet determined. In Texas, an explosion from a natural gas pipeline on Wednesday near Corpus Christi shook homes 60 miles away. No injuries were reported. The very next day in Oklahoma, an oil-fueled worker was airlifted to hospital with severe burns after an oil well head exploded and ignited three other wells. The cause for that explosion is also under investigation.
Is that Scott Pruitt's Oklahoma?
It certainly is. Meanwhile, in Alaska, no explosion yet, but fishing boats have been ordered to stay far away to avoid sparking one from an offshore natural gas pipeline that's been leaking for nearly 2 weeks in Alaska's Cook Inlet, impacting the feeding grounds of the endangered Cook Inlet beluga whale. Sea ice is preventing divers from reaching the pipeline to shut it down. Finally, wind energy set a new record in the United States. On February 12th, wind energy provided the majority of electricity for 14 states served by the regional electric power grid, which runs power lines from North Dakota to Texas. For the first time ever in the United States, wind supplied 52% of that grid's electricity reliably without any issues.
No wind explosions?
Nope.
No wind spills?
Nope.
Well, then let's keep building more oil pipelines. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. My thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate. To help Desi and I celebrate our 8th anniversary of the Green News Report as we head into a very uncertain 9th year. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
And speaking of harmonicas, the previous song, the bumper out of the hour, was from Greg Fingers Taylor, instantaneously recognized by our buddy Andy, who just took down fundraising to $189. Thanks, Andy. That was Greg Fingers Taylor, formerly of the Coral Reefer Band, and the ironic, it seemed to fit, you know, with that. Yeah. Pakistanis are smart people, that sort of bullshit eugenics that Trump adheres to. Some white people can dance. Mm-hmm. It is 11 minutes past the hour. Like I said, $189 to go in fundraising for the evening. And let's run over to the Skype line real quick, where awaits the one, the only, the Angry Indian. Hey, Angry. Angry. Aha. I hear connection noises. Kick it again, Angry.
Your connection noises. it again, Angry.
Well, we'll just be patient here. I'm sure Angry's working on it. I sympathize. I deal with this way too often, these miserable tech gremlins. Someday, I don't know, someday we'll all get them all sorted out. Yeah, by the way, while we're waiting for Angry to connect. Yo, Angry! Angry! I heard you. Okay, he disconnected. No, Asa, Angry was not shaving with his electric razor. God, you people. I don't know how you feel about it. I'm having a hard time working up a righteous sad. Another neo-Nazi got punched in the face recently. Over at Cal Polytechnic State University, he was passing out flyers in front of the Robert F. Kennedy Library. Flyers with a swastika on them. Describing it as a symbol of white power. And police were called after he got punched in the face. A guy with his face covered walked up to the neo-Nazi and punched him in the face and ran away. It's almost like a sport now, isn't it? Kind of like streaking. So, maybe that's becoming a thing, punch a Nazi. More fun than whack-a-mole! Mm-hmm. Trying to find out if Angry's going to ring back in. There you go. Properly identified by Ron in the far frozen north. Ah, the famous 60-cycle hum. There it is. Yeah. So, what else? Oh, I don't know, Jay Cruzen. It's in the... It's all a matter of degree. You know, tomato, tomato, pajamas, pajamas. Yeah. Jay Cruz in the chat room for the first time in a while. Welcome. And arguing something that might be more fun than playing whack-a-Nazi. Not as fun as whacking off, he said. Hey... I don't know. I don't know. I mentioned Milo Yiannopoulos earlier. Did you know that in an effort to protect the free speech rights of poor little put-upon Nazis, the state legislature of Tennessee last week in their House of Representatives, introduced a Milo bill. Uh-huh. State Representative Martin Daniel, a repig-licking sponsor of the bill, even held a press conference to say, campus free speech is being challenged by restrictive speech codes, speaker bans, and disinvites. Safe spaces and trigger warnings, and administrators who feel pressured to placate demonstrators. The name of the Milo bill was officially the Tennessee Student Freedom Expression Act, and says that state colleges and universities in Tennessee can't shield individuals from ideas and opinions considered unwelcome, disagreeable, or even deeply offensive. And here we find ourselves back smack dab in the middle of the same conversation we were having last night. You protect the right of someone to come and deliberately try to incite people to violence by expressions of hate. Now, it was introduced in the House, but that's not to say it didn't have its fans in the Tennessee State Senate, where Senator Joey Hensley, another pig-licking, said, "Too many times we've seen classrooms where the professor doesn't want to hear both sides of a issue. We've heard stories from many students who are honestly on the conservative side who have those issues stifled in the classroom." Mm-hmm. Poor little conservatives in basic math class. Yeah. "Professor, I was listening to the Rush Limbaugh program, and he done said 2 + 2 = 3. And it is my conservative family values that 2 + 2 is free, and not that there libtard 4 you're all the time talking about." Mm-hmm. There is at least one sane person left in the Tennessee legislature, one Senator Jeff Yarbrough. He said the Milo bill was silly. He said the First Amendment isn't under attack on Tennessee campuses. The sponsors should try focusing on real issues instead of bringing silly legislation to suck up to Breitbart. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. According to the Tennessee bill, the speech policy would have to be communicated to students at least once every semester. Right-wingers can come to this here campus and say anything about your mama that they want to because they got conservative free speech rights. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Meanwhile, back here in West Virginia, just yesterday, and again, this could cause problems with Tennessee. I'd hate to have to go to war. A lot more people in Tennessee. They'd probably whoop my ass. But you may recall a couple of years ago that Tennessee declared the Bible to be the state book of Tennessee. This, of course, we're far here in West by God Trump Virginia. We are a lot Trumpier than Tennessee can ever hope to be, and we are not to be outdone. So yesterday in the legislature of the state of West Virginia, motto, yeehaw. A Republican introduced, no kidding, really and for true, a bill to make the Bible the state book of West Virginia. You know, West Virginians have actually written books. Some of you may be familiar with the movie October Sky. That was based on a book written by Homer Hickam, who's a right-winger, but it made for a nice tale, and it was called Rocket Boys. And it was about his fascination with physics and science growing up in a coal camp in southern West Virginia. His daddy was in management, so he had some privilege, and he had some access to things whereby he could learn about rocketry, which he did, and parlayed that into a movie. But he first parlayed it into a book. Pearl S. Buck was born in West Virginia, and she wrote one of the most enduring novels of the 20th century, The Good Earth, which still has lessons in it worth learning. But no, according to the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelicals of the West Virginia legislature, West Virginia got to have a state book, and that state book got to be the Bible. Have I mentioned that West Virginia is at present broker than the Ten Commandments and poor as Job's turkey? If I haven't, well, we are. And this is a lawsuit waiting to happen. because to make a religious book the state book of West Virginia, well, that sort of runs afoul of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. And we all know that the only thing the First Amendment is good for is propping up the religion industry. But no, there's still a body of constitutional law that says you can't make a state religion. And making the Bible, the state book of West Virginia, is sort of a not-so-subtle message to the not inconsiderable number of Hindus, Muslims, and Jews who live in this state that their book don't count. I mean, that, well, okay, the Jews, you know, the Old Testament, but it's Judeo-Christian, all right? But we ain't gonna have no Quran being the state book of West Virginia, because by God, we ain't gonna have no Sharia law here. And a Hindu book, it's a hell of a lot of good stories in that Hindu book, but they just got too many gods, and one of them's a fucking elephant, for Christ's sakes. We ain't got no elephants in West Virginia. Damn nation. So, this state, poor as Job's turkey and brokered in the Ten Commandments, will buy itself a few hundred thousand dollars worth of lawsuit. I have no doubt, because this'll go through the House of Representatives, House of Delegates, like shit through a greased goose, and it'll have something approaching a escape velocity by the time it hits the Senate, it'll run through the Senate before the Senate even knows it's gobbled it up, and then it'll land all squishy and smelly like on the desk of Jim Jobs for Kunta Kinte Justice. And he will proudly sign it into law because West Virginia loves Jesus. Meanwhile, he's calling for taxes to be hiked to 8%, the sales tax to be hiked to 8%, and going to run up the tax by a dime on a gallon of gasoline, and going to run up the tax on the booze and the wine and the beer, because, you know, it's the sinners that need to pay, and certainly not the coal companies, because, well, if Jim Justice was to run up the taxes on the coal companies, then that'd just be more taxes for Jim Justice to not pay, because Jim Justice doesn't pay his taxes on his, you know, coal companies. Still not sure what happened to the angry Indian, but maybe we'll find out later. If you want to get involved with the program, and someone has, let me check in here. Let's run out to what I will bet is La Crosse, Wisconsin, and I'll bet is our buddy Flavio. Is that you, Flavio? Flavio. Really, it's going to be one of those nights, is it?
Hello?
Yeah, are you there, Flavio?
All right, Bob. Can you hear me?
I hear you.
All right. Now, I just wanted to get my ducks in a row. The reception is horrible, by the way.
Well, happy birthday to you, too.
I apologize. Just to, as an icebreaker.
Well, if you want to turn around and dial the other line, that's fine. This works for some people, other people it doesn't. But if you want to dial it 304-574-8178 number, that's cool too.
You want me to call back at 8178?
If you want to.
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, bye.
Okay.
One of these days I'm going to figure out what the problem is. I still don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'll have time sometime to work it out with John Fox. But apparently we're going to have a conversation with Flavio, who had himself a birthday earlier this week. And yes, Ron in the far frozen north, that's Jim, We're All Gonna Die Justice. Because that's what he said in his little press conference there, sitting on a road, on an empty road in Raleigh County a couple of days ago. If we don't raise these taxes, we're all going to die. But we're not going to die fast enough to need to raise the taxes on the coal or the natural gas industry because, well, they've suffered enough. Yeah, right. All right, let's try Flavio again. Hey, Flavio.
Hey, I can hear you loud and clear.
Isn't it amazing? And like I said, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you very much. This is an icebreaker. You mentioned your mama jokes. I love those. They're funny as heck. Do you remember Jon Stewart doing them?
I've heard them all my life, but I mean, it really it really wasn't about your mama jokes, though. It was about
the confirmation of Alfredo Gonzalez as Attorney General. Remember that?
Not offhand, no.
He goes, oh, snap, he says something about his wife or something, and your mama's so big, when she all that, she needs to make 2 trips.
Ah.
The other one was like, oh, your mama's so fat, she doesn't have belly button lint. She's got cardigans. Oh my God. Okay, no, did you catch this? Voters, the headline on Common Dreams, voters shame cowardly reps with town halls hosted by cardboard cutouts.
That's cute.
I thought that was awesome. The headline reads, across the country, people are drawing attention to representatives' refusal to face their constituents with mock town halls. And they have a picture of, who's this guy? A cardboard cutout of Representative Roger Williams, R. Texas, leaning against the microphone at the mock town hall in Austin.
Well, I have a feeling we need to have we need to get us an Evan Jenkins cardboard cutout.
This is crazy.
Because nobody can find him. He's hiding somewhere, and he's my congressman.
Oh, my.
Yeah, they recently announced that he'll have a town hall in Lewisburg next week, but he's not going to do it. He's going to send a staffer.
And then, of course,
because chicken shit.
Yeah. And, so the article cycles through some of the mock town halls, but then there are other town halls called... Oh, you're going to love this. Alternative town halls. Because apparently some representatives are holding restricted town halls, restricted to like 100 persons only.
Well, or like Chinless Mitch McConnell's meeting in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky today that was RSVP only.
Exactly. So they're having alt town halls. Okay. And then somebody got really creative in California and started pasting, like those missing children things on milk cartons and so forth.
Yeah.
He started pasting Representative, Paul Cook, R. California, being called out for avoiding constituents with missing photos pasted to milk containers in at least one supermarket. This is getting creative.
It brings up there's nothing like the righteous anger of an underrepresented electorate to bring out the creative energies, they've said.
Oh man, I'm
for me, this is kind of an education. I mean, this could be exported even to some, you know, third world countries that are having trouble with dictatorships and stuff like that, you know?
Well, I suppose, yes.
I mean, yeah, and I mean, I hope they'll credit the United States, of course, but, you know, it started here, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm, I don't know, are you hopeful?
Are you kidding?
No, I'm just asking. I mean, it you know, sometimes you want to despair. You want to tear your hair out. I don't have any hair to tear out, you know, I'm kind of follicularly challenged.
No, I got I got nothing, Flavio. Where would your hope come from?
Well, just all that creative energy that's being leveled at
yeah, satire is great, but it's not going to overcome a failed constitution.
I don't know. I mean.
I mean, you do realize we're in constitutional crisis, right?
Okay, yeah.
I mean, you do realize that there is not a damn thing inside the Constitution that can save us from Comrade Kumquat.
From somebody that's certifiably insane.
No, there's no. I mean, the House of Representatives would not if he took an M16 into the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue and started mowing down tourists in Lafayette Park, this Republican House of Representatives would not impeach him. You got that?
I know. It...
Okay, so and if they impeached him, there's no way there's 2/3 of the Senate that's going to vote to convict.
You mean there is nobody... Nobody there in the Senate.
And even if there was 2/3 of the Senate that voted to convict, John Roberts, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, would be the officiating trial judge, and he would not allow the conviction to stand. So impeachment, the only method provided in the body of the Constitution for removing a president, impeachment is dead. You got that?
Okay, impeachment is dead. Okay. The Constitution...
is in crisis. The Constitution is unable to meet this crisis. The Constitution has failed.
Okay.
So and I'm then... not seeing a lot of I'm not seeing a lot of room for hopefulness.
Okay.
We can go over the 25th Amendment, too. I've been doing that lately. The 25th Amendment, Section 4, allows half of the cabinet to sign a statement that says the president is unable to fulfill the duties of his office. And then the vice president becomes, if you can find those 9 cabinet members, and there's the rub... they aren't going to do that. If they sign that statement, then the vice president, Mike Pence, becomes acting president. And the president has 4 days to write back and say, oh, yes, I can. And he becomes president again. Unless those same cabinet members write back and say, no, you can't. At which point it's thrown into the Congress. See what I said about impeachment.
Yeah.
And they're going to go, well, he's just making America great again, and we're screwed. This is called a constitutional crisis, Flavio.
I hadn't realized it was that much of a checkmate.
It ain't a checkmate. It's all the pieces being put back in the box, the board folded up, the lid put back on, and thrown in the river. Where we are.
But
but okay. So they would risk another civil war?
What? Where are you getting a civil war?
No, let's suppose. Just humor me.
I mean, who's gonna fire the first shot? He's commander in chief of the armed forces. They do what he says.
Do they?
Yes, they do.
Even in spite of Nuremberg?
Nuremberg, Schmuremberg. Nuremberg does not apply to the United States of America.
No.
Never has, never will. Nuremberg applies to countries that we apply it to.
Oh, I see.
And besides, there's nothing really Nuremberg-y going on yet.
No, but I mean, the scandals keep mounting, and the leaks keep coming out, and...
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with Nuremberg.
I mean, I'm at a loss, really.
Well, I mean, good. That's the beginning of wisdom. I mean, I'm not being mean here.
Okay.
But we've got to stop with this masturbatory fantasy that somehow or another he's going to be impeached. He isn't.
Oh, no. I didn't think impeachment was on the table ever.
25th Amendment's out, too. That leaves natural mortality?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm at a loss.
You know, the only way out, and I'll go ahead and destroy this myth while I'm at it. The only way out is to take back the House and Senate in 2018. That would mean the Democrats gaining, something like 26 seats or 14 seats, just to have a bare, I think 14, 15 seats to have a bare minimum majority in the House. So then maybe you can get a bill of impeachment if you can get all those butterflies into one net. But then it has to go to the, but then, as noted before, it has to go to the Senate. Here, let's talk a little reality about the Senate in 2018, shall we, Flavio?
Go ahead.
There are 34 seats up for re-election in the Senate in 2018.
That's a lot of seats.
No, every election, one-third of the Senate is up for re-election. Mm-hmm. And 100 not being perfectly divisible by 3, there's 34 seats up for re-election in 2018.
Oh, so just a third of 100.
Yeah. Of those 34 seats that are up for re-election, 23 are Democrats. 2 are independents. 9 are Republicans. Still with me?
I'm with you.
In order to take the Senate, the Democrats need 5. They need to hold on to everything they've got and pick up 5 more seats from the Republicans.
So that's daunting.
Well, you want to know where the Republican seats are?
All in the South?
The Republican seats are in Alabama, Texas, Nevada, Arizona, Utah, Tennessee, Mississippi, Wyoming, and Nebraska. At best, only one of those seats is competitive for Democrats, and that's Nevada.
Well, yeah, Nevada is different.
So guess what ain't going to happen in 2018?
The Senate.
We will be lucky. The Democrats will be lucky not to lose seats.
It's that bad. Yeah, we do have a constitutional crisis. We have a crisis all over.
Yeah, this is a perfect storm. And the Russians played their little game at exactly the right time. There is nothing to be done about Donald Trump.
That's pretty horrible. I mean, there's got to be a way out of this. There's got to be a way. I don't claim to know it, but there's got to be a way out. I mean,
no. Okay. Are we a Star Trek fan?
Yes.
Okay. So no, here's tonight's. I haven't
watched for a while.
So here's tonight's obligatory Star Trek reference. Do you remember the Kobayashi Maru?
Is that the Star Trek, the old one?
Or yeah, this is the original series.
The original, okay. Refresh my memory.
The Kobayashi Maru was a test given to midshipmen at Starfleet Academy. It tested qualities of leadership. It presented a no-win situation. James T. Kirk became famous because he was the only one who ever beat the Kobayashi Maru simulation.
So it was like beating Deep Blue? Or
no, he beat the Kobayashi Maru simulation because he hacked the computer.
Oh, he hacked the computer?
He cheated. What we have right now, this instant, and up until the general election of 2020, when Hillary Clinton will once again be the Democratic nominee, I predict it now, is the American constitutional equivalent of the Kobayashi Maru. It's a no-win situation. There's no way out.
It's a horrible thought, but you know, I will say this, that if indeed she is the nominee, then yeah.
And when she is the nominee in 2020, we will be guaranteed Donald J. Trump, president for life.
Oh yeah, what do you need, a constitutional amendment?
And who's going to do that?
Well, I don't know.
We just went over the Congress of the United States is not going to do a damn thing about Donald Trump. The Congress would right. initiate that constitution. I mean, you know, he's limited to two terms, but the dude is over 70. That's the point. He's going to be president for the rest of his life.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we can only hope for death, I guess. I don't know.
It's all there is. Human nature is all that's left.
But then there's a spawn.
You mean Pence?
His children.
No, his children aren't vice president, Flavio. Mike Pence is.
I mean, he's kind of OLD too, isn't he?
No. Mike Pence is just sitting there waiting for, because Mike Pence is anointed by the hand of God to be president. That's how come he's vice president.
And how old is he?
Not very.
No, it's just the white hair, though.
Yeah, hell, I had white hair at 35.
Yeah, me too, 30. Wow.
You know, as Asa in Canada just pointed out, people think this is just another swing of the pendulum to the right. It's not. The pendulum has broken off and is scattered in 1,000 little pieces in the backyard.
Yeah, no, this is not, yeah, this, I don't know, here's another thought. Is secession a possibility?
No, that was settled after that little dust up we had between 1861 and 1865. none other than the Supreme Court settled it. Now, we are perilously close to having enough states sign on for an Article 5 convention of the states. That's no help either, because it will be run by a majority of right-wing Trumpansy delegates.
Wow. That's why I need to listen to Dr. O'Brien, Bill O'Brien, again more often. I read the Federalist Papers 30 years ago, okay? And I got an A in political science, but that was 30 years ago. I really need to...
Well, it might bear brushing up, and I'm not sitting here saying that I'm the old man of the mountain and I'm the be-all and end-all on this, but I've spent a considerable amount of time, Flavio, looking at all of these scenarios. And even, you know, even in my own mind, gaming out some of the more ridiculous alternatives.
It's like chess, isn't it? Except it's not. I mean, it's horrible. It's like chess at least has a logic to it.
Well, in this particular case, we are caught in a hell of the Constitution's making, because the framers had this notion that no matter how bad things got, that people would always be acting in good faith. They aren't, okay? And Russia stepped in at exactly the perfect moment. We are broken. We are broken. We are broken. And I want people to understand, I'm not kidding about the Democratic Party nominating Hillary Clinton again.
Oh, I don't doubt that. Her vanity is...
She's still got the machine. She's still got the people. There are still millions and millions and millions of dollars to be made by the people at the top of that machine. And hell, in 2020, she's only going to be 73 years old. She'll be a year or two younger than Trump. So we can have a battle to the death of the septuagenarians for the presidency of the United States of America.
No, it's...
And as Gerald points out, Gerald says, if the DNC pushes Hillary again in 2020, I will leave the Democratic Party and never look back. I shit you not. I promise you, I will leave and let the party burn to the ground.
No, I saw that. I guess he wasn't the only one that said that. I guess someone else said, if Hillary gets nominated, I'm done. Bye.
Well, mark it down. February 21st, 2017, Bob Kincaid predicts Hillary Clinton will run again and will be the nominee of the Democratic Party.
And will be roundly defeated.
And you know why? Because it's still her turn!
Yeah. No.
But now she's learned, and so she'll go to Wisconsin, and she'll go to Michigan, and she'll spend more time in Pennsylvania, and she'll still get her ass handed to her.
Yeah, because people don't like an Angela Lansbury, upper crust, anybody. They don't. You know? They want somebody that...
They want somebody they can have a beer with.
Well, they want somebody that's more down to earth. Wasn't Lincoln kind of like that? I don't think he was pettifogging. What do you call that?
No, he was just a railroad company lawyer who made his bread stealing poor people's land so the railroad could go through.
I mean, yeah. I mean,
he was not a poor man.
No, but I'm trying to think.
He was a brilliant mind, and he traveled the circuit with the circuit judge out there in Illinois, and he lawyered little cases and he lawyered big cases, but he hit it big when he became a railroad lawyer.
So he, yeah,
I had forgotten about that. So he basically was a railroad lawyer. The big railroad tycoons. Who is that? Jay Gould? Or,
It doesn't. Yeah, I mean, any of them.
Trying to remember.
But yeah, I mean, what about Lincoln? I mean, yeah, he was a great thinker. He was a great speaker, and he got it right.
Humble presidents, no.
And you know, he like other presidents before him, like Jefferson, played fast and loose with the Constitution.
Oh, he lifted habeas corpus at one point, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. And threatened to put Chief Justice Taney in prison. But, you know, Jackson did that. Jackson took the Constitution out behind the woodshed. So did Jefferson. But we have never, and let me reemphasize, never seen in the entire history of the Republic anything like the perfect shitstorm, the shit tsunami that is blowing all around us now.
That's... Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, but I'm trying to think. Are there, you know, if we could get somebody that's charismatic that could win the nomination of the Democratic Party? That
there are other people. There are other people. I mean, hell, you know, Bernie might run again. Who knows?
No, I'm thinking.
But people are looking toward, okay, here's some of the names that are getting mentioned. Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, Senator. Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Senator. Mm-hmm. Those are two of the names I hear more than any others.
So what about somebody that's also serving in the military?
Active duty couldn't run for president.
How's that?
Active duty could not run for president.
Reserve can? No?
Lindsey Graham ran, and he was a Air Force Reserve captain in the JAG Corps. Yeah. I don't know if he's retired since or not. Probably so. I really don't know the answer to that.
No, I was just asking because I was thinking Tulsi Gabbard.
Oh, no, please don't tell me you're under in the thrall of Tulsi Gabbard. House members fare notoriously poorly as presidential candidates, and two, Tulsi Gabbard is no one to hook a star to. She's a notorious Islamophobe, among other things.
Tulsi
Gabbard is a notorious Islamophobe.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I apologize. I did not know that. That's not good. No.
That's part of why she went and kissed the ring at Trump Tower before the inauguration.
Ah, I did not know that either. But Kirsten Gillibrand, she's been consistent in her positions.
She has voted against every one of Trump's nominees.
Every single one of Trump's nominees.
Correct.
So, yeah, she's been very consistent. And, yeah, that'd be kind of interesting. And she's young, in her 50s.
Trump wants to run against, apparently Trump wants to run against Elizabeth Warren. Because he's, you know, he had that meeting about Neil Gorsuch that included six Democratic senators. And he said, well, there she is. If Pocahontas is the face of your party.
Oh boy. But do you think that Kirsten Gillibrand could have a chance?
Anybody's got a chance.
I mean, a good chance.
She doesn't have much in the way of name recognition, so she'd have to have a campaign war chest.
Do we know that she wants to run, or?
No, of course she hasn't. She hasn't.
She hasn't made any announcement or anything, but she's doing the right things if she does want to.
And of course, if she does, you know, this is my criticism. This was my criticism of Hillary. Okay, of course, Hillary would have been light years better than the situation we find ourselves in now. Of course, okay. I didn't like her, but let's say I could vote. That's who I would have voted for, of course. That's a no-brainer. It's like, okay, yeah. Hand the country over to the Russians or to Hillary. Oh, no, fine. But the problem I had with her is that she couldn't connect with the people. She was like, you know, I mean, Obama got elected to two terms. And he wasn't exactly the same color. You know, he wasn't the right color.
Yeah, and of course, because of that, he was only allowed to be three-fifths of a president.
Exactly, because of the obstruction of Congress.
There are some 50-plus judges that he nominated that will not get to be judges, and instead will be appointed by Trump during his presidency, among other things, thereby doing more to swing the federal judiciary over to the Trumpanzee side of the spectrum.
But you know, maybe there's some hope there because the country did elect a black man twice to the White House. And what I was saying about Hillary was that she didn't connect with people in the same way that
no, she was Barack a terrible did. No, she was a terrible candidate, okay?
Tone deaf.
And I don't mean I'm not talking about policy. I'm talking about the physical act of being a candidate. She was a terrible candidate and a terrible campaigner.
Terrible candidate, terrible campaigner, could not connect with people, ordinary
people. And that was her second bite of the apple, and I'm just willing to bet that she'll get a third.
It's amazing. It's I don't know. I keep hope, you know, my hope is that somehow, you know, people will vote for the best candidate the next time, and we will be rid of most of these people.
Well, you know, we got a saying here in Appalachia and around the South, Flavio.
Go ahead.
Hope in one hand and shit in the other, and see which one fills up first.
Meaning?
Really?
No, I mean, I don't know everything.
Hope in one hand and shit into the other and see which one fills up first.
All right. Okay, I get it. Okay. One is material, one is immaterial, but no, I really do.
You're going to wind up with a handful of shit and no hope.
No, I think that... No, I don't want to be that pessimistic. I mean, I know
it's not... No, Flavio, please, for the love of Christ. You're not being... I'm not being pessimistic. I'm being realistic.
Okay, then I don't want to be that... Well, I guess...
I mean, I wish we could have some sort of Gabriel Garcia Marquez... a magic realism thing take place and a giant alligator would come down out of the sky and fucking eat Donald Trump and Mike Pence and Paul Ryan.
That would be nice, Paul Ryan.
And the entire line of succession until we got to a Democrat. But that ain't gonna happen.
I like the alligator thing, though.
Because it doesn't happen.
Like one of those Godzilla gators.
But it ain't going to happen. Forget I mentioned it.
No, no. It's really dire, but...
I mean, Trump's administration announced that when they round up brown people, they're sending them all back to Mexico, even if they're not from Mexico. You're from Guatemala, you're going to Mexico. You're from Honduras, you're going to Mexico. Now, granted, they're not going to round up all the illegal Irish up northeast and send them to Mexico because, you know, they're nice and white now. Used to be the Irish were not white.
No, no, they were considered the Mexicans of Europe for the longest time.
Okay, so, I mean, that's where it is, and I'm tired and flummoxed and worn out with people saying, oh, well, you know, he'll be impeached by 2018. Horse shit! He will not.
No, not by the looks of it, no.
Because we don't have enough patriotic Republicans in this in the House to do that. There are 192 Democrats, a majority of whom might actually get on board. And you know who Diogenes was?
Diogenes.
You know, walked around Athens, sticking a lamp in people's faces, trying to find one honest man.
Uh-huh. Diogenes and his lamp.
Well, we're playing the modern American political equivalent of Diogenes and the lamp.
You need to find out who isn't on the take.
And there are not 30 honest, patriotic Republicans in the House of Representatives.
So if there were, the House would be more powerful than the Senate?
No. If there were, the House would be able to impeach.
But it would still have to go through the Senate.
It would have to be tried unless he resigned because of the force and the strength of the charges. We didn't impeach Nixon. Nixon didn't get all the way to impeachment.
No, he resigned.
He resigned rather than be impeached.
Because he knew he saw the writing on the wall.
And he knew he'd lose in the Senate.
But that isn't the case now.
Clinton did not resign when he was impeached because it was a bullshit impeachment. Trump would not resign because Trump won't resign. I mean, resign. For instance, you mentioned chess. There's a term in playing chess called to resign. Correct?
Yep.
When you know you're licked, and yeah, there's no forfeit. Way out of check.
You forfeit the game. You just say, okay. And I think the thing is that you take your king and
you knock it over.
Side. Yeah.
Well, Trump don't play like that. Now, if you could get that 30 members of the 30 Republicans, 30 honest Republicans, if our modern-day Diogenes could find 30 honest Republicans to go with the 192 Democrats, and if you could get all 192 Democrats in the same butterfly net, well, then it would have to get out of a committee. And that would mean one of those 30 Republicans would have to be ahead of one of those committees, the central committee in this case being the one headed by Jason Chaffetz, who says he abso-goddamn-lutely will not investigate Trump's ties to the Russians.
What state is he from again? Nevada?
Utah.
Utah.
Do you begin, and I'm not talking down, Flavio, you've got a brilliant mind, do you begin to comprehend the depth of the hole that we are in?
This is horrible. This is horrific.
In other countries, say your native country, this is the kind of thing that brings out the generals.
Yeah, the deep state.
I don't ever want to hear that phrase again. This is the kind of thing that brings on a military coup. But again, our military is sworn to uphold the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Yeah, they're probably all
and they all answer to the President of the United States.
And they're all domestic enemies now because they're probably all dominionists and you know.
Yeah, when your military is entirely in the hands of the religion industry. Mm-hmm. Guess who the domestic enemies are?
Mm-hmm.
You, Flavio, me.
Exactly.
Everybody who isn't a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelical.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, I was hearing about this, 5-6 years ago, about the Air Force and compelling people to prayer and...
Yeah.
In the Air Force.
Right. So, you know, I hope this has been a little bit beneficial. I don't mean to bark at you. I'm not.
No. I defer to
I guess you have the unenviable position of being the recipient of my desperate desire to get people to finally understand how bad it is.
It is, yeah. No.
And how it ain't likely to get any better.
I hadn't realized how... Well, it doesn't help either. Whatever you read, you know, the media don't help either. And as far as enlightening people, I mean, I do have some political science under my belt, but nothing that prepared me for this. And like I said, that was 30 years ago when I actually my professor at university was actually a Republican. When he found out that Reagan was mining Nicaraguan harbors and, you know, consorting with the Iranians and selling them arms to finance the Contras, he replaced Ronnie Reagan's portrait on his office door with that famous painting of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And, you know, to the end of his days, he was one of my favorite, my favorite teachers. Because he was honest, and one of the cool things was that when he would lecture, you could ask him a question at any point during the lecture, and he would not lose track of what he was saying, or, you know, the thread. He would always pick up the thread where he had left off, and that was really helpful. I mean, he wouldn't get flustered for people asking questions, you know? And I learned a lot from him, actually. Are you there?
Oh yes, I'm not going anywhere, but but I am going somewhere. I'm gonna try to want to try to get a couple more calls in.
Oh please, and again, I hadn't been listening the last few days. I had some things to deal with in my apartment, we're in a bad way. Myself, I don't see how we're going to get out of this, honestly.
Well, you know, there's that old Mormon white horse prophecy that says when the Constitution hangs by a thread, blah, 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 a Mormon will come along and save us. I think the thread snapped. It too late. You know, I'm sure Willard is out there beating himself up for not running in 2016, but oh well.
Don't you wish?
Well, I mean, no, I just wish the person who'd won the popular vote was the President of the United States. That's what I wish.
That would have been...
You know, yeah. I wish more people hadn't voted for Jill Stein in Wisconsin than amounted to Trump's margin of victory in your state.
Jill Stein is just crazy as is, it's, well, it was, what was it, Tom Hartman said, you know, she's a vanity candidate.
Yeah, Tom Hartman's not the only one who said that.
No, it's just, you know, every year, same thing.
Well, every four.
Every four years of it.
Yeah, but I bet by 2020 there won't be any more pictures of her sitting around and schmoozing with Pootie Poot.
Oh, God.
Not that bothered the so-called purity pony left.
And I've said also that before that the people that did not vote, the people that could have voted and stayed home, those people deserve a special rebuke because it's like they spit on their birthright.
Right. They are the civic equivalent of lampreys. You know, they suck off the nation, and they go along for the ride, and they can't be bothered to participate in our civic well-being. Of course, then again, if that 48% had gotten out and voted, who knows? Trump might have won the popular vote, too.
No, but I really think that those people deserve special rebuke because there are countries on Earth where the vote is definitely rigged. Your vote definitely doesn't count. And this isn't one of them. Not by a long shot. That's all I got to say. I mean, it really disappointed me, the absenteeism. It's not like I didn't tell people to go out and vote. I did.
Yeah. All right. Well, Flavio, you take care of yourself, all right?
All right.
And again, happy birthday.
No, thank you so much.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Flavio calling from Wisconsin. It is 14 minutes past the hour, and I can happily announce that thanks to Joyce, and thanks to Mark, and thanks to Steve, and Ms. Karen, and Cletus. Cletus is such a sweet puppy. We are down to only $20 to go for fundraising for this evening, having closed the gap on what was left over from yesterday, and with taken care of most of the evening fundraising. That means bill paying going to happen. Steve from Georgia Stan asking me in the chat room, Bob, do you really think Hillary will run again in 2020? I absolutely do. She was quiet there for a month or so, but now she's beginning to tweet a little bit. She's beginning to push back against things that Trump says and does. She's got too much money and too much name recognition, even negative, not to. And again, she got two bites at the apple. What did I say 2 months ago? What's his name? Robbie Mook is whispering in her ear, come on, Hill. Third time's the charm, babe. You got it this time. By 2020, they'll know how awful he was, and they'll know how good you'll be. And even if you suck as a campaigner, even if you stink as a candidate, they'll still pick you instead. You got this, babe. And besides, we can rake in another shit ton of cash. And I'll be able to get that home in the country and the river of beer flowing over my grandmother's paisley shawl. I will not be at all surprised to see her run in 2020, and I will be even less surprised if she's the nominee. Which means I won't be surprised at the second Trump administration, which at that point will amount to Donald Trump having been made president for life. Right? If you'd like to get involved with the program, dial right in. Somebody was trying to get in from Iowegia. A little earlier. Try the other number. I don't know what's going on with this. Like I said, maybe I've got to find time to test this with John at some point. But 304-574-8178 is wide open. So is Bob Kincaid Horn, Skype to Skype. and any and all are welcome. I mean, I didn't mean that to turn into a topic of conversation. But that's if somebody's out there and telling you it's going to be okay, that that eventually the Republicans will come to their senses, ignore them. Do the same thing I did. Haul up a list of the Republican members of the House of Representatives and go over it one by one by one and ask yourself the question. Once you've read up on every Republican member of Congress, of the House, ask yourself, would this person vote to impeach? No. Would this person vote to impeach? No. And you do that over 200 times and you realize that we are not going to get rid of Donald Trump by impeachment. No matter what. Okay? He famously said during the campaign that he could shoot people in the middle of Fifth Avenue and not lose a vote over it. And he was right. And the same thing applies to this Republican House. He can commit any high crime, any misdemeanor. And yes, as Steve pointed out, in the language of the era of the drafting of the Constitution, that language means high crimes and misdemeanors. Those things refer to breaches of public trust. But they also refer to, you know, crimes. Like murder. Like sanctioning the break-in, like sanctioning a burglary at the Democratic National Committee headquarters. That was Watergate. Like, what else? Illegally funneling money to the Contras by selling weapons to the Iranians with the Israelis as the middleman. Like that. High crimes and misdemeanors. Donald Trump. One, Reagan should have been impeached, but was not. Two, Donald Trump, they wouldn't even mutter about it in the House of Representatives. In part, out of fear. Because anyone who speaks impeachment against Donald Trump knows that he stands a pretty good chance of some Trumpanzee trying to and possibly succeeding in murdering them because they have got lots and lots and lots of guns. And while they're not particularly worried about Russians, they are worried about liberals. Remember, the Secret Service fielded more threats against the life of the President of the United States during the 8 years of Barack Obama's presidency than they did during any number of presidents before combined. Okay? Okay. 20 minutes past the hour. Kind of unusual to hear from Todd two nights in a row, but we have. Hey, Todd.
Bob, you know what?
What?
I was listening to the conversation between you and Flavio, and I know I'm breaking a rule.
No, you're not breaking a rule.
I'm not going to keep you. I'm not going to keep you, really, because I don't think people don't want to hear me. They want to hear you. However, what I'm saying, you are telling the truth. See, this is the thing. I had to think about what you were saying last night, and the main reason I called was to apologize for talking over you a few times last
night. Oh, that's okay. I
just got very excited because these are trying times. You know? And what you were saying is the absolute truth. It's like, okay, it's one thing to make a platitude statement about, you know, this is what the Constitution says, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do. But we are in, and see, listening to Flavio, see, we are in dire straits here. There's no easy way out.
easy way. Todd, there's no way. I mean, this is a Sam. It wasn't it Samuel Beckett who wrote No Exit?
Yeah.
This is that. There's no exit.
So we need to mentally retool. We need to get ready because this is. I don't mean that in like a violent sense or anything. I'm just saying that. This thing is falling apart in front of our eyes. All right, for instance, like Spitzer. I mean, not Spitzer. Who's
say Melissa McCarthy. Yeah, Sean Spicer.
You know, yes. I thought that was the. I mean, my God. Do you understand that in college when you have to do your. Every freshman has to do a public speaking. You know, thingamajig. And if you continue on into certain areas, you got to do that more often. That was awful. He would have gotten an F. He was just reading from the paper. He wasn't making eye contact. He wasn't moving the room. He wasn't, you know, the wheels are falling off. They're not even on yet, and they're falling off.
Well, I want to add one caveat into all of this, Todd. Everything I've said is not by way of saying don't protest, keep your head down, don't march, don't. I'm not saying that. That's the only hope there is, okay, is putting popular pressure on that misadministration, that maladministration, to try to stop them when they do these hateful, odious, violent, dangerous, fearful things. And, you know, hopefully and hopefully state's attorneys general and you know, lawyers themselves will be heroes. That's what stopped the Muslim ban.
But see, since you went down that vein, this what I was very disturbed what I heard today with the I mean, I missed a part earlier of your program. Maybe you already touched on it, but these nebulous terms. You can legally enforce nebulous terms, and that's what gives a lot of latitude to law enforcement. The nebulosity, if that's a word, but you know, being nebulous in legal terms. You understand what I'm trying to convey?
Keep going.
Okay, so when you just say, well, people who've committed a felony, you know, they're going to be deported. Well, you know, that's a broad term, because when you have people who are suspected of committing felonies, when you have people who you know have committed felonies, this ICE thing, I mean, it's looking ugly. It's looking ugly really fast.
Well, it's looking Nazi. Can we say that? I think Godwin's law is gone, overdone.
Thank you for saying it. I thought I was going to be alarmist. All right, you said it. I'm psyched. What the hell? This is just since we talked yesterday. And that's some retooling? That's your retooling for real?
Yeah, I know. I thought you were going to have some barbecue news for me next time we talked.
I know, right? But all right, I did. Look, I'm working with the wood. I did look at the wood. Yeah, because it's going to have to be positive. So there will be. I'm telling you right now. There will be. I have a new skewer set for the shrimp too. Got rosewood handles, stainless steel spikes.
Nice.
Very long.
Nice.
Yep. It was a Christmas present. Mm-hmm. And, you know, shrimp. And you see, kebabs are nice because they don't take long to cook. So what you can do is when you have guests, you cook those first. And then it's like an appetizer, you know, while the big meat is cooked.
Yeah, bang, bang, on, over, done.
There you go. Bob, I just you're doing a great job. And
Well, I mean, you and I, I mean, we're not, it's not really kidding. We look to the barbecue talk as a sort of
calming thing. But the truth of the matter is, there are things that are going to, I mean, we're going to have to gather together. We're going to have good fellowship. We're going to have good camaraderie. We're going to have good sociability. We're going to have to be, what was the term used? What was it for, was it Hubert Humphrey that was called the happy warrior?
Right.
Well, I mean, we can't just march with our heads down and all grim and everything. We're in the right here, okay? We've got the good ideas. We've got the vision of America that is actually patriotic and decent and kind and generous and inclusive. All they have is fear and hate.
That's it.
So, you know, there's some reality behind that barbecue. You know what I mean?
Well, that exactly. And you know, anything that will bring people together, because when people start to eat good food together, that's what starts things. Because when you meet people on an individual level, it really changes. Like, I mean, most black folks, we always have to interact with white people most of the time. But white folks don't necessarily have to interact with black folks or brown folks or, you know, Asian people. And, you know, food is a wonderful thing. Good food is a wonderful thing because that brings everyone together. It's just like a fire. You know, we're not that far removed from what we used to be, because when you start a fire, you know, like out on the beach in California, if you can get there, whoever lives there, when those public fire pits, it's amazing. And you're doing a great job, Bob.
And well, I thank you, Todd.
I just really wanted to apologize. I didn't mean to talk over you last night.
Seriously, you got nothing to apologize for. I didn't go away from it frustrated or angry or anything. It was a passionate, excited conversation, and that's kind of how this is supposed to work.
All right, man. You got to take care.
All right, you take it easy, Todd. Later.
All right.
Our buddy Todd from South Carolina, Stan. And yeah, I just saw, it was just pointed out to me by Sparky and by Graham in Australia. Activists hung a giant refugees welcome sign on the Statue of Liberty. How about that? Statements of the obvious have become dangerously subversive. That's what happens in fascism. Of course, the other side of that coin is that also drives the repressive efforts even more profoundly. So we just, you know, we got to be ready, and we got to keep the pressure up. If you have a chance to go to a town hall or something like that, go. Even if it's a cardboard cutout town hall. I love the idea of that. Satire, parody, ridicule, these are all valuable tools, and they need to be used. All right, let's see what Jay Cruzen's up to. What do you know, Jay Cruzen?
Hey, what's up, man? Can you hear me all right?
I got you beautiful.
All right, man, I was having a little bit of trouble. I'm going to have to pump my volume up just a little bit here.
Pump it up.
Right. There we go. Hey, you're loud and clear now.
Hot damn.
All right, yeah, hot damn. You know what, Bob? I want to call in and say everything's going to be all right, Bobby. Everything's going to be just fine. I don't know what do you get so worried about?
How do you define just fine, Jay Cruzen?
Everything's going to be just fine, Bob. I mean, come on, man. Yeah, sure.
Did you get that? Wait a minute. Did you
asshole.
Did you get that bottle of Pappy Van Winkle?
No, I didn't. But and I'm sober too, by the way. Actually, I'm just a little bit buzzed, but I'm not drunk.
I mean, I could understand.
Elected an asshole, you know, it happens.
I think he's past asshole, but that's me.
Well, yeah, think I pretty much fucking agree with you. You know, he's using the whole fucking Hitler playbook. He's talking about, he calls it fake news. You know what Hitler called it?
Lügenpresse.
Yeah, the lying press. Translation. That's correct translation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, that's just one thing. But then you go on right down on the fucking line, and, you know, it is what it is. And fuck it. To be honest with you, if you ask me, we fucking deserved it.
I don't think so. I don't think that some poor family that just wants to keep eating food deserves it.
No, I'm not talking about them. I don't think they deserve it. I think as a country and our political system and what we've been doing for the last 100 fucking years, we fucking deserve it. We have fucking made this ourselves.
Well, I forget who it was that said eventually. What was it, maybe H.L. Mencken? Said eventually the American people will elect the president of their dreams a perfect idiot. And we thought that prophecy had come true with W. I think progressives out there are going, oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, no, really. Bring back W and Cheney. I'll be cool with it, you know?
No, not really.
No, because they were just evil. What we have now is evil and a trip to the Mad Hatter's Tea Party.
You know, that's exactly the way they treated Hitler when he came to power in the 30s.
Well, I mean, you know, with Bush, they made you an offer you couldn't refuse.
He was some kind of idiot, and he was trying to demoralize these certain people and this and that and everything else, and all his stupid ideas, they just kind of laughed at him and blah, 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 and this and that and everything else. And then look what happened. And that's the road we're going down.
Well,
he's a fucking idiot.
No, I've made it.
But he's no fucking idiot.
Jake Cruzen
is running the damn show.
Jake Cruzen, I've made it clear. I don't necessarily think he's an idiot. I think he is deeply mentally ill. Okay, my personal thought is that he's probably suffering from neurosyphilis. But you know, that's a prediction I made a month ago, and some doctor caught up with last week.
Yeah, I saw that. I kind of reviewed that a little bit, and yeah, it's possible. But you know, pretty much, he's just a fucking narcissist, and the Republican Party elected him. I mean, the people, it's almost the same situation, Bob. I mean, you go back and look at the 30s, it's almost the same damn thing. And it's scary. It really is.
Yeah, so we're not going to be all right.
No. Well, yeah, we're going to be all right.
The ones who survive?
Right now, aren't they?
The ones who survive will be all right?
Yeah, I guess. That's what it comes down to. I guess that's what it comes down to. I mean, Germany's all right now, right? How long have we spent fucking pushing and bullying our way around this goddamn globe to get ourselves into this situation? To where we finally have the one that's really going to push and bully and be a son of a bitch. Just like Germany did back in the 30s. How long have we spent doing that, Bob? About 100 years?
Well, I think you're oversimplifying just a, you know, teeny tiny bit, but, you know.
Okay. All right, well, break it down then. Why is it too simple? Why is it?
Well, what happened in Germany is not what happened here. It does not take a wheelbarrow full of $1 notes to buy a single loaf of goddamn bread. Okay? Unemployment is not running at 70%. You know, those were the realities those were the harsh realities on the ground of the Weimar Republic.
Mm-hmm.
What we have here is a bunch of disaffected white people. Van Jones is right. You know, November 8th, 2016 was a case of white lash.
That's oversimplifying it, Bob.
Well, there's look, really? You brought up Steve Bannon a minute ago. When Steve Bannon and Milo Yiannopoulos together say that the alt-right comprises more than half of the Republican base, I'm oversimplifying?
That's the base, and that's the voters, and I agree 100%. But you know what else? You know who pulls the levers of power? The same motherfuckers, the same big daddy dogs of fucking capitalism that were pulling the power, pulling the levers of power back in the freaking 30s and 40s. It's the same fucking group, man. They didn't go anywhere. They just waited, and they sat back, and here they are again. And they found these fucking right-wing bastards and these fascists and these racists and these homophobes and these xenophobes and whatever the hell phobe you are, and they used them. They used them to get back. But instead, this time it's in the U.S. instead of over there in Germany. Same fucking thing.
Then why are corporations, and this is weird for me to be saying it, why are corporations some of the ones that are doing all the pushback?
No, that's a little bit of a handful there, as far as corporations.
I mean, the NBA pulled out of North Carolina.
Sports is
the recreational corporation, whatever industry. After holding their annual trade show in Salt Lake City for 20 or 30 freaking years, said no. If you want to turn Utah into West Virginia, we're out of here, and they're gone.
Yeah,
Google, Microsoft, Apple, all pushed back against the Muslim ban.
I'm sure there were plenty of people to push back against them back in the damn 30s, too. But, Bob, I'm telling you, man. I mean, not only that, but, I mean, maybe he doesn't have the support. He'll garnish it eventually if we allow it to happen, which I'm saying that we should not allow it to happen. But, I mean, you know, The other simple thing is, I mean.
Okay. Let's take everything you've said.
Maybe it's just our fucking turn.
Jay Cruzen. Let's take everything you've said as read.
Uh huh.
What's your answer? What's the solution?
As read, what? What's the solution? Resistance. Every day, in the street, in the ballot box, in the halls of power. Get your fucking ass involved and
okay,
vote.
So what are you
going
to? So
vote,
what are you
going
to? So what are you going to do in November 2020 when Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee running against Donald Trump incumbent?
That cannot be allowed to happen.
Now what are you going to do? No. What are you going to do when it happens?
I don't think we're going to make it that far, Bob.
What are you going to do when it happens?
Bob, I don't think we're.
This is
make
a hypothetical.
It.
What are you going to do when it happens?
I'm not going to vote for her. Just like I didn't vote for her the last time.
Ta-da!
What does it matter? We're not going to make it that far, Bob.
We're all just going to melt down in a nuclear holocaust and...
Well, there's a pretty good chance of that. I don't know what's going to happen. This is uncharted territory for the U.S. But come on, man. Be honest. And especially when you go talking about Russia.
Well, that's a little obnoxious, Jay Cruzen. I'm honest for 3 hours a night, 5 nights a week.
Oh, okay, you're honest. You're honest about your opinions, and I respect that too.
And they're fact based too. Yay
and
me!
There's a lot of fact based, and there's not a lot of facts that I disagree with you on. I don't have my alternative facts like Kellyanne Conway. I do not. I don't have any alternative facts to rebut you. I mean, I guess there's kind of two different directions I'm looking at here. Number one is we elected a fascist, and that's a big fucking problem.
Yeah, and he enabled, and he flipped the fascist switch inside the Congress of the United States. We don't just have a fascist president. We have a fascist Congress.
Well, they've been fascist for longer than he was president.
Yeah, he's empowered them.
Yeah.
I mean, Congress hasn't done a lot, but do you realize that one of the things that they did manage to do out of the gate, one of the first fucking things they did was to make sure that people here where I live get poisoned some more?
Oh, yeah, I saw that. You know, that's just wrenches my fucking stomach. It really does, Bob.
Well, it doesn't do me a hell of a lot of good either.
Every one of them some bitch nominees to every department. I mean, Bessie DeVos. I mean, come on. Jesus Christ. And I cannot believe what... Alright, but that's just what I'm saying is, I mean, own it. I mean, I'm not saying you have to own it, but this fucking country has
to. No, hell no, I won't own it. I voted, I did the right thing on November the 8th.
Yeah, well, I did the right thing too.
No, Jay Cruzen, you did not.
So I did.
No, Trump won Florida. You could have helped prevent that.
No.
You know, I took, like, as was noted last night, I took all manner of shit. Quit telling people how to vote, Bob. You know, well, okay. It's all over with. And
right,
some people got it right and some people got it wrong. I got it right, you got it wrong, okay?
All right, well, I'm not going to say that.
I don't expect you to.
I'm not going to say that I got it wrong. And, you know, going along with the Democratic Party isn't always the right thing to do, Bob.
It's the better. It would have been the better goddamn thing to do this time through. That's for sure.
Would it have been the better thing to do when they elected Harry Truman?
Huh?
Would it have been the better thing to do
when the Germans invaded Pearl Harbor? What are you talking about?
Truman. Not Roosevelt. Truman.
You're not making just a shit ton of sense right now, Jay Cruzen.
Oh, I'm not making a shit ton of sense, huh? So you're saying the Democratic Party's never done anything wrong?
You're saying the election of Harry Truman was a problem?
Yeah.
That you, what, Dewey would have been the better choice?
No. You go back further than that. It should have been Wallace.
Well, that wasn't an election thing. That was FDR's personal choice.
Oh, no, it was not either.
They dumped Wallace because Wallace was saying things that were deemed to be not particularly they were unfavorable. So they dumped Wallace and picked up Truman.
Back in those days, the vice president got a nomination. He was denied the nomination in the first round, and in the second round, it was given to Truman. And he was by far the popular candidate. And he should have been.
Oh, Jesus.
The Democratic Party fucked him.
Oh, it's all the Democrats' fault again. All right, well, I'm going to try to get one more phone call in here, Jay Cruzen, and I can't run off down this cold trail.
We can go through the weeds all you want. I mean, I'm sorry, Bob, but I'm just saying, you can't just follow your party blindly.
No, you follow your party in a state of informed consent, okay? You follow your party when you understand that there are only two choices on the goddamn ballot, and one of them is a fucking nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
An orange goddamn nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
So some of us got it wrong, some of us got it right. I happen to be part of those who got it right. Jay Cruzen, I'm going to try to take another call. You take it easy.
Yeah, have a good night.
You too. Bye. That's a new one. Harry Truman. Let's see here. Doggone it. One of these days we'll make the stress line work. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. I guess it's all right for me to do a twofer since what's his name did?
Todd?
Todd.
Yeah, what's his name?
I'm sorry. I had the strangest goddamn dream last night. I dreamed I was president.
Was it fun?
Oh, it was great. I'm not going to go into it all tonight, but I'm telling you, it was one of those.
Was there a Russian pee-pee party?
No, but there was a woman. I don't even want to go into it because
some people claim that there's a woman to blame.
My glasses will fog up. But have you ever had one of those dreams that was so vivid and intense and entertaining and amazing that it woke you up out of a dead sleep? I'm not talking about a nightmare.
No, I know exactly. Yeah, it was a mind movie in Technicolor widescreen cinescope.
It was incredible, Bob. And I was
IMAX.
Thinking, you know, you might say, well, it was just a dream. Well, doesn't the Bible say your old men will dream dreams and your young men will see visions? Now, I'm too young to be an old man and I'm too old to be a young man, but I've had my share of dreams and visions. So who's to say, you know? But and anything's possible. I mean, we've got Trump as president. So any goddamn thing is possible.
Well, no, the fun thing about dreams that are that vivid, I'm convinced now, Scott, that that's actually a door into an alternative universe. There is a universe where whatever happened in that dream is you.
Be still my heart.
She was that hot, was she?
She was so hot. Well, I don't... Boy Scouts were in a circle around her roasting their weenies. But anyway,
I'm not awarding a goddamn cowbell for that, Scott. I'm just not. You can't make me.
I didn't call about that, believe it or not. And I'm not going to talk about freedom of speech, although I enjoyed our
conversation. Punky's dunking his head in fucking bleach right now, isn't he?
No, he's okay. He's all right. He's just jealous he can't have similar dreams. Although he's had dreams before where he's actually fallen off of his perch. He had one last night. Maybe that's what inspired me. Maybe we did a cockatiel human mind meld, and it transferred over to me so that when I went to sleep, I could fall off of my perch. But anyway, no, the reason I called, and I forgot to tell you last night because we got all caught up in the freedom of speech, I wrote a letter to an email to the president of AT&T about this piss-poor DirecTV Now situation. And I got a call back yesterday from one of his assistants, okay?
Son of a bitch, you are president. You got through to DirecTV Now?
No, I got through to AT&T.
Oh, I'm sorry.
DirecTV.
Yeah.
But anyway... she left a message yesterday saying that she got the email and that's why she was responding and to call her back. And I did today, but we're engaging in phone tag. So she didn't get back to me, but I laid out every one of my, you know, you talk about my, Festivus, my list of complaints.
The airing of grievances. Yes.
The airing of grievances. And I aired them. Oh, did I air them? But anyway, I'll let you know how that transpires, because I have gotten to the point, my 3-month prepaid trial, you might say, is up on March 8th. And if that system is not working in a stellar fashion with either the return of the 72-hour rewind feature or the DVD, I'm out of here. I'll do without cable. I've done without it before. I can sure as hell do without it again. How is yours working? You haven't mentioned it lately.
Most of the time it works. And my big beef is not with DirecTV Now per se, since it's working.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty... look, for what I want, it's a pretty good bargain. I think there's only two Electric Jesus channels on there, which is huge for me, because it just violated my little corner of my heart that's capitalist, that I was having to subsidize, you know, somebody with purple hair 3 feet tall who wasn't Marge fucking Simpson,
and crying all the goddamn time.
Right. On the other hand, it's working okay. Here's my beef.
Yeah.
When you go to watch other channels online, they'll have this sign-in thing. For instance, HBO Go.
Mm-hmm.
You sign in with your cable provider. You scroll down through the list. Oh, look, there's DirecTV Now. You put in your login and your password, and boom, you're watching HBO Go. DirecTV Now, however, is not listed on a bunch of other channels. For instance, yeah. I remembered last night, and it had to do with the fact that Agnes was over with the grandbabies and everything, so I was a bachelor last night. So I was doing, and I suddenly remembered that Ron and Raleigh had reminded me that season 2 of The Expanse had started, which I had been eagerly waiting for. So I ran over to Sci-Fi to watch The Expanse, season 2, the four episodes. I was going to binge watch the four episodes that are out there. And so you got to sign in with your provider. Click, scroll, DirecTV Now. DirecTV's there, DirecTV Now is not. Same thing happened one night when I wanted to watch what's the name of it now? The Tony Bourdain thing on CNN. I can't remember its official title.
I know the show.
I mean, it's consistently good TV. And so scroll. No goddamn DirecTV Now for me to check. Now how hard is this for them to include that on their list of paid viewing subscriptions?
Well, the way I described it, I looked forward to DirecTV Now for months and months and months when they were doing the build up and talking about it. And I was an early adopter. I signed up for the 7-day trial in late November. So, and then prepaid 3 months in advance to get the Apple TV box, but also to lock in at that $35 a month rate for 100 plus channels, which is that the package that you got?
Yeah, 100? And then I paid the extra $5 for HBO.
Yeah, okay. All right, and, you know, I figured, now here's my experience, okay? I used to have an AT&T landline. I've had my cable service through AT&T, and then as of 4 or 5 years ago, my iPhone, okay? Whenever there's a problem, I call them up, they fix it, and they credit the bill, okay? So I went by the AT&T brand, which has served me nicely for many, many moons. And this thing has been, the way I described it, this DirecTV Now is the new Coke of technology.
Oh, that's hard.
Well, I'm sorry. That's the only comparison that I could make.
New Coke sucked.
Oh, I know. But what I'm saying is the fact that it did not live up to what their plan was. First of all, the people didn't like it, and it didn't taste good. Well, the technology equivalent of that with this DirecTV Now is the fact that the fucking thing doesn't work. It's not meeting the expectations that you would have consistent with a company that's been around for 100-some-odd years, as Coke was and as AT&T has been, although this is not the same as the old AT&T, but so the analogy breaks down, but it's the same concept. And I just finally got fed up with it, and I said, look, I'm going to write these bastards and let them know that either they're going to have to shit or get off the pot, okay? And so I'll let you know how it all turns out.
Well, I will be interested to know. I mean, because a long time ago. I don't even know if you do. Do you remember a comic strip called Eek and Meek?
Eek and Meek?
Yeah.
Vaguely, I'm not sure.
They were almost. They were almost just stick figures. They kind of looked like little ants.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes, I do. I do. Man, that takes me back a few.
And there was a running gag about their travails with the phone company. And of course, they never won. And dealing with these outfits reminds me a lot of that. It also reminds me of the fact that, and this is a spoiler, too bad, because it's a 1967 movie, goddammit. A James Coburn vehicle called The President's Analyst.
Oh, yes, yes.
Which is hilarious. And it turns out the bad guys aren't the Russians. But, in fact, the bad guys are the phone company.
Yeah. I forgot about that. That's a great movie.
So, I mean, there's an old and honorable thread of unhappiness with telecommunications providers.
Yeah.
And they seem uniformly bad.
Well, my complaint with DirecTV Now primarily is, if it wasn't ready, don't launch it. And this thing obviously wasn't ready.
Well, so far, with a couple of limited exceptions, it's been okay for me.
Well, in fairness, lately, the live streaming has been okay. Well, what the hell happened to the 72-hour rewind feature? That was one of the main reasons.
Oh, shit, I didn't even know I had one of those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, on some channels, you could go back 72 hours if you missed a show and watch it. But anyway, I know we're losing the people that don't have this service.
Yeah, we're off in the weeds, and I'm up against it, and I'm getting messages from Steve from Georgia Stan telling me that I've only got a minute left.
Okay, all right, man. Well, take care, calm down, be cool, be happy, and
I'm extra happy because Agnes is home now.
As Robert Frost said, the only way out is through.
There you go. Robert Frost is one of my personal favorites.
Well, there you go.
All right. Scott, you and Punky take care. We'll talk soon.
Okay, Bob.
Bye now. Bye. And it's time to go. We're a minute before the hour, 30 seconds to go. Thanks, everybody. I will wrap up $20 short of the fundraising goal this evening, but I'm not going to sweat that because maybe it'll get knocked down by our by a couple of members of our legion of loyal and ever so helpful subscribers. So thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful evening. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Sparky. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.